This is Arts Alive for this Saturday, May 28th. I'm Brian Lauritsen. On the program today, since the beginning of humanity, people have connected with other people through song and dance. Composer Eric Whitaker often combines the ancient tradition of group singing with innovative modern technology. Whether it's in person or online, Whitaker says coming together in song brings out the best in everyone.
I believe that choral music is a perfect metaphor for the way a society ought to function. You bring people together from all different backgrounds. The moment you start to sing, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it doesn't matter what religion you are, what race you are, what your background is at all, you're all equals in that moment.
Eric Whitaker takes the podium next Sunday to conduct the LA Master Chorale in a concert called Sonic Masterworks. We'll have more from my conversation with him in a moment. Also on the program today, coming soon to the Music Center Plaza, Dancing Under the Stars to a Bollywood beat. We talked to choreographer Achinta McDaniel about the 2016 kickoff of Dance Downtown. And on Ask the Dean, when we picture composers, we often imagine them, say, at a piano. But why? That's the question for Dean Rob Cudieta of the USC Thornton School of Music. First, here's Alan Chapman with the Arts News.
From the Arts Desk today, two South American maestros find positions in a Southern California symphony, director leaves Little Tokyo Museum after a record-breaking tenure, and eyewear becomes accidental art. The LA-based American Youth Symphony is heralding a new age with a new music director and a new resident conductor, both alumni of the El Sistema program for young musicians. After a search that included candidates from around the world, their new music director is Caracas-born Marlos Izcaray, currently music director of the Alabama Symphony Orchestra. Off the podium, Izcaray is also a cellist and composer. AYS has also hired resident conductor Juan Felipe Molano. Molano was appointed conductor of the LA Phil's Youth Orchestra LA in 2014, previously held that position with orchestras in Colombia's El Sistema program. The American Youth Symphony was founded half a century ago and was led for nearly two decades by Alexander Traeger. After 4 years as president and chief executive of downtown's Japanese American National Museum, Greg Kimura is stepping down next month. Kimura told the LA Times he came to the museum with three goals: to make the museum a financially sustainable institution, to expose the Japanese American story to a broader audience, and to reach out to a younger generation of Japanese Americans. Kimura says he feels that for the most part he accomplished all three. He helped double the museum's annual attendance in 2015 with a popular exhibition called Hello, exploring the super cute world of Hello Kitty. No word on where Kimura plans to go next, although he is also an ordained Episcopal priest. The museum says it's launched a search for his successor. And a pair of eyeglasses left on the floor at San Francisco's Museum of Modern Art started attracting attention as an actual artwork this week. A 17-year-old museum visitor was inspired to pull the prank after questioning the value of an actual artwork on display, a stuffed animal on a gray blanket. So he placed a pair of glasses on the ground and stepped back to see how patrons would react. Soon there were people gathered a safe distance from the spectacles taking pictures of the quote-unquote art. The teenager took his own photos of those admiring his work and posted them on Twitter, where they quickly went viral. That's the Arts News for Saturday, May 28th. On this date in 1900, the Gare d'Orsay railway station was inaugurated in Paris. In 1986, the Beaux-Arts building was reborn as the Musée d'Orsay, one of the biggest art museums in Europe and home of the largest collection of Impressionist and Post-Impressionist masterpieces in the world. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
This is Arts Alive on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. And now for something completely different. What does this music have to do with this music? Would you believe they are actually the same song? Listen again.
before I stumbled into classical music, I thought I was going to be a pop star. And I played synthesizers and drum machines all through high school. This is the late 80s. And my favorite band in the world was Depeche Mode.
That's Eric Whitaker, superstar composer, a choral music icon, the man behind the virtual choir, and a writer of some of the most sublime music of our time. This music is an arrangement, or you might say a cover, of a song by the English electronic band Depeche Mode called Enjoy the Silence. Eric Whitaker tells me that song was an anthem of his youth.
And so for years and years and years, I've wanted to do a cover or a treatment of one of their songs. I don't know what you'd call it.
I like that treatment. I like that better than arrangement and better than cover.
Yeah, so, right? Yeah. To kind of find my way into that beautiful world. And when I'm setting choral music traditionally, I'll take the poem and I'll memorize it and live with it and walk around, and then these little musical fragments kind of bubble to the surface. But this was a song, and I knew it so well. But I'd never actually sat down and just looked at the lyrics. You know, I could sing them with this dance tune, and the lyrics are so fragile and dark and tortured that when I started reading them as poetry, this other kind of music started to bubble to the surface. And so the treatment of it that I did actually is it's bigger and it's lush and it's a little haunted. A lot of the things that the original isn't.
On June 5th at Walt Disney Concert Hall, the LA Master Chorale will perform Enjoy the Silence with Whitaker conducting. A bit of a preview, perhaps, of the next two seasons when Eric Whitaker officially becomes the LA Master Chorale's Artist in Residence. Artist in Residence, not Composer in Residence.
No, it was a very gracious way, I think, of them allowing me to kind of spread my wings a little bit. I didn't start as a conductor, but they keep letting me do it all over the place. And
you have your own group.
Yeah, I've got my own group, and I do a lot of guest conducting, and I love it. I adore it because it's so much different than the isolation of, you know, sitting in a room pushing notes around trying to – it's a very social experience, and also you're making music in real time. So I think part of the idea of Artist in Residence was that I could not only compose, but that I could occasionally conduct like I will in June 5th. Mm-hmm. But then also that I could bring these other crazy things that I do, you know, these virtual choirs or outreach on the web and technology-based stuff. So it was just a very nice way of them sort of saying, all right, here's the toy box. Go nuts.
Yeah. Eric Whitaker tells me one of the large-scale projects he will undertake as artist-in-residence with the LA Master Chorale is a big multicultural, multimedia online concert event, which will be streamed live all around the world. The date is still to be determined, but Whitaker tells me it'll probably happen in about a year and a half or so. Eric Whitaker also tells me his post as artist-in-residence with the LA Master Chorale is about more than just Eric Whitaker. He says it's also about him conducting other people's music. Whitaker tells me he's become absolutely enthralled with the music of the Swedish composer Anders Hillborg, and he'll be conducting a work by Hillborg on the Master Chorale's June 5th concert.
I'm going to try to pronounce the name of this piece, Muyayum.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Close enough.
The idea is...
You do it right.
Well, if you say it slowly, okay. Muyayum. Okay, so the idea is that's the basic thing that the singers are singing is that, and it's just an invented word. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, okay, because that was my next question.
Yeah, it just doesn't mean anything, but it's designed to get them to sing overtones, right? So if they're singing, right, and you get a whole bunch of singers doing that kind of thing, and it creates this cloud of those glistening overtones above the vocals. And it's this extraordinary piece. It's 13, 14 minutes long. It's like this distant landscape, and you can hear the overtone cloud, and then the other thing the singers are doing is this, you know, these great waves, and it builds and builds and comes back down and builds back up. And it's kind of a transcendent experience. We're having a good time putting it together.
Yeah. Thinking of like the idea of throat singing and the beautiful sounds that can be created over sort of the ugliness of the of the bottom part of throat singing.
That's a beautiful way of describing it, actually. Yeah, you get the sweet and the salty
yeah.
in the same tone. Yeah, that's it. And a lot of this piece is so soft that really the ugly, if you will, that kind of buzzy, that there fades to the background. And what you get is just those high shimmering overtones. And it really does sound like a cloud.
Muyayum by Anders Hillborg. Music that Eric Whitaker will conduct alongside his own music on the next performance by the LA Master Chorale. Ultimately, Eric Whitaker tells me his music, and choral music in general, is for everyone.
I believe that choral music is a perfect metaphor for the way a society ought to function, from top to bottom. First, you bring people together, oftentimes men and women together in the same room, from all different backgrounds. The moment you start to sing, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it doesn't matter what religion you are, what race you are, what your background is at all, you're all equals in that moment. And there's this beautiful moment when everyone breathes together for the first time, right? The conductor lifts his arms and you feel everyone in the room breathe together. And it's that sense of shared intention. And in that moment, each individual ceases to be. They still retain themselves. They're still there, but they're part of something larger than themselves. It's all in service of simply making something beautiful, simply learning more about ourselves as a culture and a community and as human beings, and the wonder and the mystery and the majesty and the sorrow and the suffering of what it is to be a living person. Nothing for me does that as quickly and efficiently as choral music. It cuts straight to the core of it, and I think creates a truly transcendent experience for everyone in the room.
Eric Whitaker conducts the LA Master Chorale in his own treatment of the Depeche Mode song Enjoy the Silence, and also music by Anders Hillborg called Muyayum on Sunday, June 5th at Walt Disney Concert Hall. Whitaker also kicks off his tenure as the Master Chorale's Artist in Residence this fall. For more information, visit lamc.org and ericwhitaker.com. You're listening to Arts Alive here on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Next Saturday at 8 a.m., The Little Mermaid emerges from under the sea and makes her way to the Hollywood Bowl. And the Ojai Music Festival's Peter Sellers gives us a taste of this year's festival. Until then, you can listen to past episodes of Arts Alive anytime with the podcast. Find it at kusc.org/artsalive. Coming up, choreographer Achinta McDaniel says modern dance helped her teen angst, but it was after 6 months studying movement in India that she really found her creative voice. But now, here once again is Alan Chapman with this week's Around Town Arts Calendar.
Here's a bit of what's happening around town, starting as we always do with a free event. Tomorrow, the Santa Monica Symphony performs the final concert of their 71st season. Pianist Robert Thies joins conductor Guido Lamel and the orchestra for Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto. The program also includes Rimsky-Korsakov's Russian Easter Overture and Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. Santa Monica Symphony is tomorrow evening at 7:30 in Barnum Hall. Details at smsymphony.org, and again, admission is free. The City of Conversation is on stage now at the Wallace in Beverly Hills. Hester Ferris is a preeminent liberal of Georgetown dinner parties when her son suddenly turns up with a Reaganite girlfriend and a shocking new conservative worldview. Starring Christine Lottie, Jason Ritter, and Georgia King, performances of The City of Conversation through June 4th at the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts. For tickets, thewallace.org. And on Thursday, the 52nd annual Franz Liszt Festival, hosted by the American Liszt Society, is going to be kicking off at Cal State Northridge from Thursday through Sunday. There will be lectures, masterclasses, and other events highlighting the connection between Liszt and Russian music. Highlights include a recital by Vadim Kolodenko and a gala of rare Russian piano concertos. The annual List Festival starting Thursday, and for more information, you can visit als2016.org. That's a bit of what's happening around town this week. For details on these and other cultural events in Southern California, visit performingartslive.com. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
Coming up on Arts Alive, we ask the Dean, but first, Dance Downtown is a free series at the Music Center Plaza that offers lessons to dancers of all ages and abilities in a variety of styles. This year's series kicks off Friday with an evening of Bollywood dancing led by Achinta McDaniel, founder of Blue 13 Dance Company. McDaniel started taking tap and ballet lessons when she was just 3 years old, but she tells me when she hit her teens, she discovered modern dance, and she said it felt like home.
Struggling like everybody else with what your identity is. So that for me was just this great way to harness everything and just see, oh, I could just let go. Oh, I'm barefoot, I can fly around the stage, and I don't have to be restricted in a tutu. But I am Indian, I'm first generation born here, so all the Bollywood stuff and the Bhangra just I grew up with, just being in a Punjabi, Hindi-speaking, English-speaking community. So be able to take me to a wedding and see all the just social dancing and everything. You know, it was so immersive and so much fun growing up. Even though I had this amazing bicultural kind of upbringing, my work was very much always all through high school and even all through NYU was very much very modern, very ballet-oriented, very concert. And I guess I always kind of thought the Bollywood stuff was like for fun and just kind of a side thing. Then I was terrified, like every graduate who graduates with a degree in the arts, especially dance. So my aunt and uncle are lovely, and they had a beautiful flat in Bangalore for me to stay in. And it changed my life. It was 6 months of probably one of the best times of my entire life. And, you know, you're young, you're like 21. And it was the first time I wasn't going with my family for a wedding, for some family function. I just was going as an adult, and I was there to dance. So I studied for the first time classical Indian dance, which was Kathak. And there are so many classical forms, but that's the one I really wanted. It's sort of known as a straight leg dance. It's very rhythmic and beautiful. All of it is so rooted in storytelling. But it was so different for me to go into a concrete dance studio, first of all. There you call your dance teacher Didi, which is your respectful term for older sister. You touch her feet before and after your lesson. And then you have a tabla player, a classical Indian drum player sitting there on the mat in front of you. It's like a secret language. It's not Hindi or Punjabi or English. It's its own secret language between drummers and musicians and dancers. And so that was incredible to learn to count da, te, te, da, da, te, te, da, da, te, te, you know, and learn all the rhythmic formulas. And it was so foreign to me as a Western dancer. And then physically, it was so different. The girls that were incredibly good and had been dancing since they were three in classical Indian style only. They'd be like, oh, modern dancers are so delicate. Because my feet would be like bleeding and blistered and horrific. When I came back from India, nothing was ever going to be the same, and it never has been again. All of my work, I still consider it very modern, but it pulls in these cool rhythmic formulas and sort of takes them and twists them and turns them on their head.
What led you to Los Angeles?
I met a boy. So I met my husband. He's in film. I was in New York still. I started my company, Blue 13, in New York City. Uh-huh. And I was there just for a couple of years. And then I was ready to leave. But everyone said, are you crazy? You know, to come here to a place that's so considered film heavy and dancers don't really do a lot of concert work. It was a great challenge. And what I really love is after being here for now over 13 years is that there's been a huge movement. There already was. But there's so many incredible dance companies and dance makers here in LA, and they've really built this momentum. I mean, definitely that I've seen since the time I came to now. So it's great to have this like incredible community of kind of pioneers of dance in LA. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this for 15 years. There's still this constant yearning to change and learn or add a different kind of rhythm or do a classical Indian rhythmic cacophony with our feet, but in combat boots and bells and do it to electronic music. So it's fun to just like continue and experiment with that.
There's something so, like, elementally human. You know, all of this technique, of course, that is certainly a foundation for what you do, but to be able to have that but not be, like, bound by that or a slave to that.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's a point where you just get so thirsty as a choreographer, as an artist, to pull in different techniques and keep feeling a new experience. That longing to create and build something and make something yours and figure out what your identity is in that.
So this is the 15th year of your company.
It is.
How have you grown it? What dreams do you have that are still off in the on the horizon, looking to be fulfilled?
Well, I started just with 4 dancers in New York City. And then I've grown the company since then, and now we have 12 dancers in the company, including a couple of apprentices. We do touring work internationally, which is really exciting. Our most recent touring piece is called Fire and Powder. That's our sort of homage to Romeo and Juliet. It's sort of this urban Indian mishmash. It's great. Our company is so diverse, and it really, I think, invites a really diverse audience that maybe doesn't traditionally come to see dance, possibly. Hmm. So it's nice to kind of continue to reach new people that way.
Yeah. So Dance Downtown, an initiative from the Music Center, where basically come to the plaza and dance is the invitation, right?
Yeah, it's the best. Okay, this is one of the most fun things that I ever get to do. Dance Downtown has been at the Music Center, I think, for 12 years. I've been doing it for 11 years, running the Bollywood and Bhangra Dance Downtown. It's under the stars. It's a dance floor that they lay down. They sometimes cover the fountain. Sometimes they have the fountain bubbling. There's lanterns. And then often I'll have a live drummer, a dhol player, and then I always have a DJ with me. Little ones come that are 2 all the way up until, you know, older groups of people that come in. And then they'll do it every other week. So they'll have cumbia or line dancing or salsa. It's just time to have a great time, make some new friends, dance with a stranger or your loved one.
One of the wonderful things about music and dance is that it really does seem to exist in every single culture on this planet. Mm-hmm. Part of being a human being is singing in some way. Part of being a human being is expressing ourselves through movement.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to that sort of aspect of what dance is to you? You know, we're able to come from all sorts of different backgrounds, socioeconomic statuses, cultures, you know, and do this thing that is just reminds us that we all share something.
Yeah, I love that you said that, actually. I find any performance of music or dance, just have a look around you and that shared experience of hearing the dancers breathe or those little moments, seeing the sweat, having that shared feeling of joy and sadness all at the same time is just something so human and brings us so close together. Yeah, I might be 55 years old and I might be Indian and you might have your little 4-year-old Filipino baby in your lap, but we're both sharing the same thing. And I think that's so powerful for us to just go to events like Dance Downtown, taking a look around you and just realizing that we're all in this plaza together to share in this human way of expressing ourselves through movement. I mean, there's nothing more pure than that.
Achinta McDaniel is the founder of Blue 13 Dance Company. She helps kick off this summer's Dance Downtown series, a big dance party out on the Music Center Plaza with a night of Bollywood dance. Next Friday at 7 p.m. on the plaza there at the Music Center. And Blue 13 will be back at the Music Center in August for the series Moves After Dark. More about the company, their performances, and classes at their website, blue13dance.com. Now here's Gail Eichenthal once again, this time with a question about composers and keyboards. For Dean Rob Kudieta of the USC Thornton School of Music.
What do we have this weekend? Who is it from?
It's from a listener in Los Angeles, Stuart. He writes, why are so many composers pianists? We have Bach and Beethoven, Brahms, Debussy, and you picture them at a keyboard. I think what Stuart is asking is, You know, is it a chicken or egg? Is it that you're if you're a pianist, you're more inclined to become a composer, or are composers drawn to the keyboard? So I went to our composition faculty and talked with them about this. And here, they really were divided right down the middle, including the composition students.
Wow.
And there were two camps on this one. The first camp felt that pianists are more likely to become composers, or maybe are even better composers and more comfortable, because they have grown up with multiple lines, with melody and harmony. They have grown up with counterpoint, two parts going. Very few other instruments do. They have grown up with a huge range so that they have the entire keyboard at their disposal. So that right from an early age, a person who's playing piano is thinking along these lines. So that was camp number one. But then camp number two was the exact opposite. And camp number two said, no, actually, it's just a function of our Western tradition and how we train composers, and it might even be a disadvantage to be a pianist.
Because you're composing at the piano?
Well, not so much that. Oh, that was brought up by a couple people, that either school said that's a danger, is that if you just let your fingers are going to go to what they already know, so that's a danger on both sides. But they feel that pianists lack some things. First of all, they rarely play in ensembles. So they're usually thinking, at the early stages, whereas if you play trumpet, you're playing in a school band or things. So you're not thinking in terms of an entire group. You're not thinking in terms of a conductor. You're not thinking in terms of everyone trying to get an expressive phrase together. So that's a definite disadvantage there. So they point to the fact that the only composers we would say this about are Western classical composers. And the reason for that is very, very few composers become composers without going through formal training. Whereas if you go and look at a Chinese person writing art music, they are not going to be pianists. And the same with pop music. You have people who are songwriters who are writing on guitar. So there's nothing inherent except the training. So we really have two ways of looking at this one. There's another thing, as I talked with the faculty, that was interesting. I asked them, can they actually tell what a composer's instrument is by the music? And they said, no, not in classical music and art music, they can't. Unlike what they said in the pop music field, you can tell which songs, for example, the Beatles wrote on guitar and which ones they wrote on piano. Let It Be was clearly a piano song. They said in classical music, they really have no way of knowing.
You would think, and I've always had the impression, that it would be easier to compose at the piano because you have the multiple lines and you have the chords and you have the big range.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to think about that as being a disadvantage, mm-hmm. because it limits you to what you've heard.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it is true that all of our training in conservatories are all done with keyboard harmony, and everyone has to take a couple years of keyboard regardless of their instrument. So
some of the top composers of the younger generation, Esa-Pekka Salonen, horn player, Steve Stuckey was a string player,
mm-hmm.
It seems like there may be a renaissance of the composer who's not necessarily a pianist.
Actually, all of the faculty, regardless of who I talked to, and the students immediately responded to this question saying, well, you know that's not true. And it hasn't been true throughout history, is that, in fact, that's more the stereotype.
Of course, today a lot of them are at the computer, aren't they?
They are at the computer. However, even if they're at the computer, oftentimes they're entering the information through a keyboard. So it's hard to say. They may not be pianists, but they are basically working with a keyboard.
What do you think the percentage is of composers working today who use a computer?
That's a really interesting question, because some swear by it and others feel that absolutely it's not the way to go. And
sounds like a question for another show.
It really does. It really does. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Dean, for being here.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Dean Rob Kudieta and his team of musical experts? Send an email to askthedean@kusc.org. Again, that's askthedean@kusc.org. You can also submit a question on Twitter. We're at @classicalKUSC, and just use the hashtag KUSC Ask the Dean. And that wraps up this edition of Arts Alive for this Saturday, the 28th of May. Next week, Peter Sellers tells us what's in store for the upcoming Ojai Music Festival. He's the music director. We also talk to the original Ariel from Disney's Little Mermaid. That's next Saturday morning at 8 on Arts Alive. The technical director is Mark Hatwan. Kelsey McConnell is the executive producer. We had help this week from KUSC's Gail Eichenthal and Alan Chapman. Thanks as well to Sheila Tepper. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Have a great holiday weekend.